now, your hosts for Life from the Pulpit, here's Nick Perez.
Yes, and how's it? And welcome back to the new era of eloquence and exposition. This is Life from the Pulpit, the fastest half-hour podcast in the West, live and local, on location at the Merced Church of Christ, deep in the heart of the Central Valley, offering up news and views you can use on Scripture and society, with a little help from my friends. I'm your host for this half-hour journey into theology and other sundry matters, the voice of the Valley, Nick Perez. Greetings and welcome to the program. We've been walking through the book of Daniel, and we finished off the section, the prophetic section at least, in Daniel chapter 2, where the dream that Nebuchadnezzar had is interpreted by Daniel, and it's a prophecy of the coming kingdoms, five kingdoms, not six, as is typically thought by most people who interpret prophecy literally. Five kingdoms total, the final kingdom being pictured as a rock or a mountain. That's always, or typically, it's a reference to God's kingdom. Mountains equals kingdoms, typically. Isaiah 2, come up to the mountain of Jehovah. That's the kingdom that's above all other kingdoms. Just a quick recap. The head of gold, that's Babylon. The breast and arms of silver, that's the Medo-Persians. The belly and thighs of bronze, those are the Greeks. The legs of iron that go down into the feet of iron and clay, that's the Roman Empire. And a lot is made about the 10 toes. I referenced this in the previous episode. Much is made about the 10 toes on the feet. Although toes are specifically mentioned, it does not say that there were 10 toes. Nowhere are 10 toes mentioned. You're not going to find the number 10. You're just going to find toes. Along with the feet of iron and clay. The emphasis of the image in the prophecy is upon the divided and weakened nature of that fourth kingdom. And so, you know, there's no reference, no symbolic interpretation whatsoever of the 10 toes, and it's really a ridiculous picture because sometimes you'll see this. Clarence Larkin in his book, the greatest book on dispensational truth ever, he has it's a lot of pictures in there, and one of the images that he's drawn is this image from Daniel 2. And you'll see that the toes of the feet stretch all the way down across millennia of time and history, all the way to, however he interpreted it, 10 nations, European Union, something like that, that would rise out, a revived Roman Empire coming back to life and that sort of thing. That's just, it's comical. And it's not what was pictured. The legs and the feet, the legs of iron, the feet of iron and clay, the toes, all of that is representative of the Roman Empire, which was coming. In the days of those kings, there was going to be a kingdom which would rise up. Verse 44, in the days of those kings, who? The Roman emperors. The God of heaven would set up a kingdom that shall never be destroyed. That's his kingdom, the kingdom of Christ, which happened. The kingdom of Christ was established in the first century. His rule, his reign over men. Well, Daniel gives the interpretation. What's the reaction from King Nebuchadnezzar? He fell upon his face. He paid homage to Daniel, commanded that an offering and an incense be offered up to him there in verse 46. He burned incense to Daniel. Very interesting. Here's this pagan king. And this is him struggling, trying as he might to give honor to whom honor is due. Daniel gave the interpretation, even though he does come around verse 47. He does recognize that Jehovah is the true and wise God. He says, the king answered, said to Daniel, verse 47, truly your God is God of gods and Lord of kings and a revealer of mysteries, for you have been able to reveal this mystery. God is the one who gave the interpretation. And I don't want to make too much out of this, but notice he says he's God of gods and Lord of kings. He doesn't say he's King of kings. That's Nebuchadnezzar. So maybe, just maybe, there might be. Again, I don't want to make a lot out of it, but it's interesting that he doesn't call God King of kings. He's Lord of kings. All right, so verse 47, that's where he recognizes Jehovah as the true wise God. Verses 48 and 49, the conclusion of this chapter, Nebuchadnezzar promotes Daniel and his friends. Then the king gave Daniel high honors and many great gifts and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief prefect over all the wise men of Babylon. Daniel made a request to the king. He appointed Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon, but Daniel remained at the king's court. So Daniel, and that's significant there, that last phrase, Daniel remained at the king's court, because it flows right into chapter 3. Nebuchadnezzar is going to go out to the plain of Dura with a bunch of anyone who's anybody is going to show up out here at the plain of Dura for something. But let me just conclude this chapter by making a couple of observations here. First, what do we see? We see the amazing perception and power of God. God is the God of gods. He is the King of kings. We see the amazing foreknowledge and sovereignty of God. He's a God who raises up nations and brings down nations, raises up kings, brings down kings. And he's able to see all this before it happens, before historically in time it happens. We see the invaluable blessing of prayer. Remember Daniel and his compadres, they fell down on their knees in prayer when they found out, hey, our heads are on the chopping block unless something happens, unless God gives this revelation. We see the marvelous mercy of God. Daniel and his friends are spared from a certain fate because God gives the interpretation. And fifth, we see the man of God rewarded and exalted because of his faith and conviction. In fact, the men of God, because of their faith and conviction, they're all promoted together. God, he takes care of his own, in other words. He takes care of his own. And so Daniel, he remains at the king's court. That's where Daniel is. That's where Daniel stays. That's significant because chapter 3, verse 1, we see this golden image that's going to be erected. And in fact, we hear this idolatrous edict which comes down from the king. Let's start here, verse 1 of Daniel chapter 3. King Nebuchadnezzar made an image. It's interesting. After he has this vision of an image, he goes out and makes an image. Interesting. He made an image of gold, whose height was 60. Remember, he's the head of gold. Just make these connections. Interesting. Whose height was 60 cubits, and its breadth 6 cubits. He set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Now, the king, he may be doing a couple things here. We can question the motives here a little bit. You know, I mean, he's just seen this image. Maybe he's trying, and this is just his way of trying to show honor to God, Jehovah God. It might be. However, I think Nebuchadnezzar's a little hard-headed. He doesn't always get the lesson. The Assyrians, they had a common practice of making images of themselves that looked like themselves, and it usually represented the dominion that they had over a place. Might be something that carried over to the Babylonians. The image could represent the many gods of the Babylonians. And so here's King Nebuchadnezzar in an effort. The image could represent himself. This is me. I'm king of kings, right? And so this image represents himself, and he's trying to unite his kingdom under one religion. Not unlike what would happen in the Roman Empire under the Caesars and the Caesar worship that would go on and that sort of thing. But seems like Nebuchadnezzar, maybe he's trying to unite his kingdom under one religion. He's the image. You worship that image, ultimately worshiping him. But the Babylonians, Nebuchadnezzar makes this image of gold. The Babylonians were notorious for using copious amounts of gold, I mean just obscene amounts of gold, in their temples. Nothing was withheld in their worship. There's a temple, or at least, there was one of their gods that was made of gold. It was estimated that he weighed 60,000 pounds. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of dough, a lot of moolah there. And that's spare no expense when it came to worship. In the plains of Dura, by the way, archaeologists, you know, the spade of the archaeologist digs and just confirms all kinds of biblical history. They actually dug up a mound which could have been used for the placement of this image which Nebuchadnezzar builds. Well, Nebuchadnezzar, he's up to something. Either to honor himself, or maybe to honor a god of Babylon. Maybe he wants to honor Jehovah, and he just doesn't know how. He's just ignorant, and he just doesn't know. This ignorant pagan king. But he uses this idol, whatever it is, whatever his goal, he uses this idol to try and achieve it. Well, here's this assembly of all of who's who now, verses 2 and 3. King Nebuchadnezzar sent to gather the satraps, the prefects and the governors, the counselors of the treasurers, the justices, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the justices, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces gathered to the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up, and they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Ooh! That's a lot of people. A lot of people of importance, a lot of people of position. Anybody who's anybody is going to be out here for this. Very impressive. Very impressive. Thousands of people come to this dedication. They follow through. Satraps, by the way, these are governors who rule over a certain area. And so each of these, they have their own subtle nuance of who they are, what they did. But again, people of high power, people of power, people who are people. They're the somebodies of the Babylonian kingdom. Well, notice this, verses 4 and 5 now. The herald proclaimed aloud, "You are commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages, that when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, you are to fall down and worship the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up." All kinds of nations, and all kinds of instruments from all kinds of nations. And in fact, some liberal Bible scholars have come on the scene here and said that some of the instruments that are named in this list, verse 5 here, those were instruments that were only known by the Greeks. So how, the Bible must be wrong, because how could King Nebuchadnezzar have something that was exclusive to the Greeks? Remember, this is the King of Kings, though. Nebuchadnezzar is the King of Kings. If he wanted something, he could get it. He could get anything he wanted. No doubt he brought some of these instruments. And so here are some of the greatest men on the planet. Get this image in your head. Some of the greatest men on the planet at the time that they were living, and they're all falling down, faced down, bowing down to this lifeless image. What an awful, awful image. Someone has said that if you've never seen idolatry in life, then you have never seen it. This is terrible. Terrible, terrible picture here. What idolatry, gross idolatry can do to people. Well, there's a warning issued in verse 6. Whoever does not fall down and worship shall immediately be cast into a burning fiery furnace. Bow down or die. That's what it comes down to. There may be a prophecy of this, Jeremiah 29, verse 21. Jeremiah 29, 21. You can look that up and see for yourself. But here's this warning. You don't fall down and worship, you die. Cast into the burning fiery furnace. All right, verse 7. Therefore, as soon as all the people heard the sound of the horn, the pipe, the lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, all the peoples, nations, and languages fell down and worshiped the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Just again, it's just a gross picture of idolatry. Here's the temptation, and people accept it. They fall into the temptation. They stumble. They sin. Part of it, you know, again, human nature, we look at this and we think, yeah, but they could have died, you know? You see the fiery furnaces. Furnaces, by the way, which were usually made they were used to make bricks, and there happened to be one handy, I guess. And so, hey, you don't fall down and die, or you don't fall down and worship, you're going to die in the fiery furnace. The easy way out would be, hey, bow down. Bow down and worship. That's the easy way out. If you don't bow down again, you'll be thrown into the furnace. And so there are at least three who, when the trumpet, when the horn, the lyre, the pipe, the bagpipe, the trigon, all this stuff, when it's not sounding, there are at least three who are still standing. Live or die, they're not bowing down. Now, let me just say this, brothers and sisters, Christians, if you are listening to this, this admonition against idolatry hasn't gone away. We are still called to be worshipers of the one true and only God who could never be crafted into an image. 1 John chapter 5, verse 21, little children, keep yourselves from idols. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 7, do not be idolaters. One of the works of the flesh, Galatians 5 and verse 20, is idolatry. No, we are not to be idolaters. We are not to certainly, this is, again, this is idolatry in its purest form, bowing down, worshiping, praying to an idol. Someone has said that their idols back then went, they may have looked like birds and bears and beasts. Ours go vroom, vroom today. I can hear some of the idols out here at one of the local motorcycle shops across the street. Well, what about Daniel's friends? Again, there are at least three who don't bow down. Verse 8, therefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and maliciously accused the Jews. Literally, they ate the pieces of the Jews. That's the it was as if like eating flesh that's just torn off the body. That's the language. I mean, it's very graphic language that's used here to talk about the way these Chaldeans were talking about the Jews these three young men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, because they weren't falling down and worshiping. Verse 9, they declared to King Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that every man who hears the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music shall fall down and worship the golden image. I had a buddy who preached a sermon on this text. He called it, he entitled it, The Sound of Sin. That's what these musical instruments are all about here. The sound of sin. The temptation to fall down and worship, to bow down before this God. Verse 11, whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into the burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, pay no attention to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. So accusations fly. They're denounced, maliciously accused. They ate the flesh off, as it were, of their body. Just jealousy. Jealousy has driven this. It's driving these accusations that are being made. The king, he's the one who appointed them. He exalted them. And they're not obeying you, king. And so the decree that the king made is restated to his face. Look, you're the one who made this decree that we got to bow down when we hear the music, right? And so verse 12, the accusation. The question of the day, I'll answer it later, but where's Daniel in all this? We'll come back to that. But in the meantime, here are Daniel's three friends. They are there, and they are accused. Now, what about this? What about the defiance here? Let's keep reading. Verse 13, then Nebuchadnezzar, in furious rage, commanded that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be brought. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said to them, is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image that I have set up? Now, if you are ready, when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music to fall down and worship the image that I have made, well and good. But if you do not worship, you shall immediately be cast into a burning fiery furnace, and who is the God that will deliver you out of my hands? Here's open defiance. Open defiance, yes, on the part of the three, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, to the king's decree, but also open defiance by King Nebuchadnezzar and a challenge that's made to Jehovah God. That's what's going on here. Now, remember, Nebuchadnezzar, he knows. He knows Jehovah God. He got the interpretation of his dream from Jehovah God, through Daniel, mind you, but he knows that these three men are defying him. They're not bowing down. And he wants to give them he gives them a chance. Look, I'll start the music up again, get the band back together, but you guys need to bow down. And so Nebuchadnezzar, there's this open challenge here. God hears it. God hears that challenge. The question comes down, is Jehovah more powerful than Isbar, who is the Babylonian god of fire? Is Jehovah more powerful than Isbar? That's the challenge. That's what we're going to see here. So we have now Daniel's friends. They've heard what King Nebuchadnezzar has had to say. What are they going to say? Verse 16, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. it's great, you know. We don't have to justify this. Yes, you might be the king of the world, but we don't have to answer you. We answer to one King of Kings, Lord of Lords. We answer to one God of Gods, and that's Jehovah God. Verse 17, if this be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. By the way, in the Hebrew, this is very emphatic, this verse, verse 17, their answer. Not if this be so. They said, we know our God whom we serve is able to deliver us. So very emphatic there in the original. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up, even if he doesn't. Now, we know he can. He's powerful enough. But even if he doesn't, we're not going to latruo, and we're not going to proskeneo. That's the Greek there, the Hebrew, the Greek translation, the Hebrew there. Both words, serve and worship, captures the entire enchilada, if you will. We're not going to do this. So that's their response to the king. Again, they know that God can, but they don't know if he will. But they've made up their mind. Whether they live or die, hey, we're delivered from Nebuchadnezzar. And so, again, these are courageous young men, probably in their 20s. Again, they were teenagers when they came into Babylon. Now they're probably a little older. But their relationship with God was more important to them than Nebuchadnezzar's decree. That's just what it came down to. They were more devoted, more committed to God than they were to King Nebuchadnezzar. A couple of passages here. Let me just make some connections here. Isaiah 43, verse 1. But now, thus says the Lord, He who created you, O Jacob, He who formed you, O Israel, fear not, for I have redeemed you. I have called you by name. You are mine. Verse 10, you are my witnesses, declares the Lord, my servant, whom I have chosen, that you may know and believe and understand that I am He. Before me, no God was formed, nor shall there be any after me. I am the Lord, and besides me, there is no Savior. It's just God. God's the only God there is. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they refused to kowtow. They refused to bow down. Now, the rest of the story, as it were. Verse 19. Then Nebuchadnezzar was filled with fury. The expression of his face was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. I gave you the chance, guys. Come on now. And they didn't. He ordered the furnace heated 7 times more than it was usually heated. Probably a literal thing, but it could be a figurative thing as well, because look at Proverbs 26 and verse 16, where it talks about how a sluggard is more wise in his own eyes than 7 men. Just could be hyperbolic, hyperbole, you know, that sort of thing. But again, it could be literal, and probably is literal, that this thing got super, super hot. Verse 20. And he ordered some of the mighty men of his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and to cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their cloaks, their tunics, their hats, their other garments, and they were thrown into the burning fiery furnace because the king's order was urgent. And the furnace overheated. The flame of the fire killed those men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So it doesn't seem Nebuchadnezzar's used to using... He's not used to using... this fiery furnace, hasn't had to use it, except for now for these 3 guys. Nebuchadnezzar doesn't seem like he's used to defiance, not used to people not listening to him and doing what he says automatically. In addition, the audience, the people that were around him, they sort of forced his hand on this. Do you got to do this? Like it or not, you made the decree. The furnaces back then, they were conal. They were shaped like a cone, usually had an opening on top. And what's interesting is, let's see here, verse 23, these 3 men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they fell bound into the fiery furnace. In the Greek text, not in the original Hebrew, but in the Septuagint version, between verses 23 and 24, there is a prayer, a supposed prayer of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego that's inserted into the text. But again, it's not in most of our translations because it's not original to the text. It was added later. So what happens? Well, we find the miraculous deliverance of God. Verse 24, then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished and rose up in haste. He declared to his counselors, did we not cast 3 men bound into the fire? They answered and said to the king, true, O king. He answered and said, but I see 4 men unbound, walking in the midst of the fire, and they're not hurt, and the appearance of the fourth is like a son of the gods. And then Nebuchadnezzar came near the door of the burning fiery furnace. He declared, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out and come here. Remember, Nebuchadnezzar's the guy who back in verse 15, the end of verse 15, he said, who is the God who would deliver you out of my hands? Open defiance, right? Well, he finds out who does this there in verse 26. He says it. Servants of the Most High God. The God who could not do this did it. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they came out from the fire. Verse 27. And the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the king's counselors gathered together and saw that the fire had not had any power over the bodies of those men. The hair of their heads was not singed, their cloaks were not harmed, and the smell of fire had no smell of fire had come upon them. The cords, remember, they had been bound hand and foot. It looks as though the cords had been burned off. But nothing else, no other fire, nothing. It's gone. The bonds, the restraints are gone, but hey, they don't smell like fire at all. Verse 28, Nebuchadnezzar answered and said, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants who trusted in him and set aside the king's command and yielded up their bodies rather than serve and worship any god except their own god. Therefore, I make a decree. Any people, nation, or language that speaks anything against the god of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be torn limb from limb, their houses laid in ruins, for there is no other god who is able to rescue in this way. That's the king's reaction to the miracle. He and actually, the rest of verse 30, he promotes, then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. He promoted these men as well. Phenomenal story of the providence and the mercy and the grace of God. And certainly, as things seem to get worse and worse in our country, I've talked about it on this program before, certainly a story that we can look to take heart, to know the kind of God that we serve. He's still a God. He's still a God that He's able to deliver us. He's able to deliver us. But even if He doesn't deliver us physically, we know that the spiritual deliverance is greater. All right, let me get to the sponsor for this half hour. The sponsor of this half hour is Merced Church of Christ. Located at 2050 Yosemite Parkway, the Merced Church of Christ is composed of people devoted to the Word of God, people devoted to the worship of God, and people devoted to the work of God. Our purpose is to worship God, proclaiming His love and salvation in Christ, and to care for the lost and for one another. The Merced Church of Christ meets every Lord's Day, that's Sunday, for Bible study at 9:30 a.m., morning worship at 10:30 a.m., and evening worship at 6 p.m. We also meet for midweek Bible study on Wednesday at 7 p.m. She's served by her preaching minister, yours truly, Nick Perez. Go online and visit www.mercedchurchofchrist.org. Merced Church of Christ, relational, reliable, real. All right, I hinted at it earlier. Let's get to the question of the day.
Question of the day.
This comes, again, from this section here in Daniel chapter 3. If Daniel was so faithful to God, why didn't he refuse to bow to the idol that Nebuchadnezzar had built? Remember, in the first chapter, Daniel chapter 1, Daniel and his three younger men, these three young men, they refused to do anything that violated their conscience, right? But here in chapter 3 of Daniel, we only see three of the four not bowing to the idol. Why didn't Daniel refuse to perform this idolatrous act also? Now, the question presumes that Daniel is out there on the plain of Dura with everyone else, doesn't it? But does the text say that? Does the text say that Daniel and that Daniel and his three friends are out there? No, it just talks about the three. He undoubtedly would have refused. He would not have bowed the knee if he had been there. But there's absolutely no indication that Daniel was present. And in fact, at the end of chapter 2, Daniel, he remained at the king's court. And I believe that flows right into chapter 3, where King Nebuchadnezzar and all these, again, anybody who's anybody, he drags all of these men out into the plain of Dura, and it just so happens that three of those men are Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Daniel stays behind in Babylon, it would seem. Someone's got to stay behind and run the kingdom while the king's out doing who knows what. And so he stays home, it would seem, takes care of the city. That's the simplest explanation for this. He may have been out elsewhere taking care of the king's business at the time. But we do know, again, Daniel is a man who stands firm on his spiritual convictions. Daniel chapter 1 shows that. We'll see Daniel again later on in chapter 6 do the same thing. He refuses to retreat even under the threat of death. So again, had he been present, we can be assured that he would not have engaged in the idolatry either. But again, it seems as though it was just the three, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who were out there. Daniel was elsewhere, incapacitated. So that's the answer. Daniel, he just wasn't there. I'm out of time. Feel free to leave a comment on the website. Always like to hear what you have to say. Also, stop by the Life from the Pulpit Facebook page. Like us there on Facebook. Also, stop by the Life from the Pulpit blog, www.lifefromthepulpit.wordpress.com. All my commentary there on Luke, James, 1 John, all there, all available, all free for you to use and peruse in your everyday Bible study. Now on iTunes, search the iTunes store and you can download all the episodes of this podcast onto your particular iDevice. Follow me on Twitter, at InPulpit, at the letter N as in Nick, Pulpit, P-U-L-P-I-T. Also, check out Merced Church of Christ website, MercedChurchOfChrist.org, MercedChurchOfChrist.org. Plenty of sermon audio there. Updated just yesterday with a new sermon about Imagine Marriage. Grace be with you all. Thanks for listening.